Welcome back to Beyond the Barbell, brought to you guys by Reebok, official outfitter of CrossFit and the CrossFit Games. My name is Blair Morrison.
And I am Ben Alderman, and today we have the real pleasure to be joined by Dan Nitro Clark, former NFL player and American Gladiator. Dan, I feel like we've been trying to make this happen for a while, man. Thanks for taking some time.
Well, good things are worth waiting for, and I feel like, you know, B&B, I feel like I finally made it. You know, when you get beyond the barbell, right, you've arrived in the CrossFit community. So maybe my CrossFit credentials don't get me on the show, but I'm lucky that I've had a past. Like you said, I've played in the NFL, and I pranced around on spandex for TV for years. So however I got here to be on Beyond the Barbell, I'm grateful to be here.
I feel like the kind of crescendo and the culmination of Beyond the Barbell is also to have a former American Gladiator on. So I think we both reached our height of success at the same time.
Love you, man. Love you, man.
Yeah. Speaking of spandex, let's go back to American Gladiators. I think that's the biggest way that people kind of know about you. So you were the character, so to speak, or how would you define your role as Nitro on American Gladiators?
At that time, it's just who I was. It's who I was, and it was a little bit of a character. The first audition they had at some park over here in Los Angeles, and they had, like, you know, football tires you go through, and it was really super lame. And at the end of it, they gave us a piece of paper that had a character description for three different characters. One was Gemini, who was, you know, personality was back and forth. The other was Malibu, you know, the surfer dude with the beers and the babes. And the third one, which appealed to me, was loud, cocky, arrogant. For some reason, I fell into that. I guess it's from the football background. And I remember the first, we went through all the drills, you know, it was easy, and we didn't know what it was. It was like, this is lame. Then they gave us that. They said, okay, we're going to ask you some questions and answer them in character. And the only one I can remember is they asked me, you know, okay, so Nitro, what do you eat? And I was like, raw meat. Right? I mean, what a tool. But I can look back and laugh about it now. An American Gladiator. So here's how I got the job. Besides going through those interviews and giving great one-liners like raw meat, the final interview, like about 30 guys had passed through, and now it was at Universal Studios in the big sound stage. So suddenly, you know, it felt really, really real. Like, well, this could be something, you know, where we're at Universal Studios. What they did is they brought in a bunch of kids. I say kids because I'm older now, but they brought in a bunch of college kids. And they told these college kids, look, hey, guys, you guys are testing a game show for a day, and you guys are going to get $45. So I think most of these guys thought it was going to be like Price is Right or something like this. Well, they gave these guys $45, a brown bag lunch. They put them on a concrete sound stage, and the first thing they had to do was play Breakthrough and Conquer with me.
Oh, no way.
Yes.
So Breakthrough and Conquer, for those of you guys who don't remember, you can see it on YouTube, is where they draw out a football field 15 yards long, and the guy carries the football, and he has to get past the gladiator. And it's only about 10 yards wide. So at this time, I was maybe 25 years old. I'd been living in Hollywood about a year, and my dream of being a Hollywood whatever it was going to be was running on fumes because I was running out of money. I was about to go home. So this is what I had. This was my chance to stay and pay my rent for another month. So I remember this guy who couldn't have been more than maybe $1.65 soaking wet lines up across from me on the concrete. They drew out chalk lines of a football field on the concrete and they blew the whistle. And this guy comes running at me, and I remember, man, I just put my head down. You know, I played linebacker, and all of a sudden just, bam, slam into this guy. I pick him up off the ground, slam him on his back.
Oh.
He hits his head against the concrete. The ball goes flying. And I'm like, oh, shit, man. Really blew this. I got a little too carried away. Right? The producer calls me over. And I'm like, oh boy, he's going to tell me to get off the soundstage. There's no room for this in this sport. And he calls me and he whispers in my ear and he goes, you got the job.
No way.
Yeah, that dude, that's how, that was the thing, the coup de grace, whatever.
Dude, how great is that? Because I feel like if that same exact thing happened today, like you'd be like facing a lawsuit or something, you know, or they wouldn't bring you on because for fear of a lawsuit.
Yeah, I mean it was a different time.
That's great.
Know? But I don't know how to put that into context, but yeah, it was a different time. I don't know if the kid was concussed or what, but you know, look, maybe it's one of those stories he tells, you know, around with his bros.
Absolutely.
Hey, dudes, you'll never believe this, but I was the guy who he knocked out who got the job. Yay!
I got to ask, man, did he get up and get into the circle with you after that?
It was game over.
Yeah, he didn't get into the conquer section, right?
I would say they wheeled him off, but. He earned his $45 that day and his brown bag lunch.
Yeah, absolutely. So no Powerball, no Conquer.
No.
Nothing like that for him after that.
That was the one thing they had us do, and it was such a long time ago. And I can tell you, you know, how magnificent my first day at work was. I remember the first day at work, you know, I go to the sound stage. And again, this is Universal Studios. This is in the back sound stage. I think Arnold was there filming a movie at the same time. And I remember I opened the sound stage. And it's empty. And I said, like, I'm here for work. Where is everybody? Hit it on his first day at work, went to the wrong sound stage.
Nice. Dude, Dan, I want to ask you a little bit about the other gladiators that you worked with. So you had this, you know, NFL football background and obviously a very aggressive personality. Were all the rest of the guys like that? Or were their characters kind of more put on for TV?
I don't know if I had an aggressive personality in life, but when it came go time, you know, you just get shit done. You're used to living, you know, whistle to whistle. And when that whistle blew, you know, on the football field, you gave 110%. So I don't know if, like, I was, you know, I don't know if I was necessarily out beating up guys and shoving around guys. That was never my thing. I was always, kind of a kind, nice guy when people got to know me. The other guys, so Jem and I played a couple years in the league. Laser played a couple years in the league. Malibu, who was on that first season, you know, I knew he was going to be in trouble, like, whenever we did contact drills, and I would see him, like, really blink his eyes. You guys, you know that when you see someone gets hit or you're playing football and they start blinking a lot, you know they're not going to be good at contact stuff. But he had great hair, though. I will say that about Malibu.
Great hair.
Yeah, he had hair like Farrah Fawcett.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a great guy, but his sport was racquetball. It doesn't translate to getting hit with a pugil stick. It doesn't translate to, you know, powerball, which is similar to rugby or football. And after the first season, as great of a guy he was, they just knew he wasn't a good fit. The girls were a different breed. Those girls were great athletes. I think they would do really, really good in the CrossFit games. They remind me of a lot of the top competitors we see in CrossFit. It's very, very similar. The guys, I don't know if they would, you know, back then, I don't think we would have been great CrossFit competitors. I think we'd have been better regional guys. We were just too big. You know, I was 240, Mike was 265, Laser was 230, Thunder was 290.
Oh, my God.
Linebackers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, bigger than mine. Steve Hanenberry played tower. He was 6'6", 275. So the whole idea, the concept behind American Gladiators was it gave Davey a chance to slay Goliath.
Exactly.
That's what the drama and the intrigue was.
Like, I remember watching that show, and I was 7 when the first season came out. So I remember watching that show, and I was glued to it. And I liked watching the contender win or do well, but at the same time, I had my favorites. And I mean, you were right there. You know what I mean? Like, I had my favorites in terms of the gladiator. So I wanted both people to win. It was a weird dynamic because most combat sports, you pick somebody you really want to win and somebody you hate. And it wasn't like that in American Gladiators. Somehow you guys were able to kind of bridge the gap where people wanted to see you every week, but then they also wanted to see the contender do well, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. And it was an interesting thing to me because, you know, I wasn't a bad guy, but I kind of played a bad guy, especially the first few years, and people seem to respond to that. But I'm also, like, believe it or not, I'm also a pretty sensitive guy. You know, I have this, I don't know where it comes from, I have this innate deep desire to be liked by people. When I meet people, I'm like, I really, really want them to like me. year in, we went and did this massive tour across the country, you know, 120 cities, Madison Square Garden, Sports Arena, where the biggest venues, you know, in the United States. And I remember, like, with the first test venue we did, I went out there and it was like wrestling. Everybody was booing me. And I was like, oh my God, you know, I hate this. This is terrible.
Right.
So from that point forward, I think it was our end of our third year, I said, you know what? I have to find a way to still be that Nitro character, but to find a way to be more likable. Because I just didn't have the thick enough skin to go play the villain, you know, for another 7-8 years. I think the show was on for 8 years total.
Well, let me put your mind at ease, because 4 years ago, I think it was, when I met you at the NorCal Masters, you know, when we run around at CrossFit competitions, and you know this as much as I do, you see people and you're like, man, have I met that person before? So you just kind of smile at everybody. And I knew I had recognized you, but we were standing there by the food truck and, you know, we just started chopping it up. I don't know how. And I was like, man, this guy's pretty cool. And I looked you up on Instagram because I liked you, not because I knew you were Nitro. So, you know, you still are liked, my friend.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that was, I appreciate that, man. I do remember that. I remember we shared sweet potatoes with bacon.
Wow. It was our first date.
Exactly. I remember our first meal. You had me at spandex.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, no, that, you know what? Speaking of competitions, though, for Masters competition, that NorCal, those guys put on a great competition. That was one of the better Masters one, I guess, I've done. You know, I mean, anybody out there, if you guys are looking for a good Masters competition, come do the NorCal one. It's in January, but it sells out, I think, in November, right, Ben?
Yeah, it does. It
sells out almost automatically.
Yeah, I'm hoping they're open up the 35 division now that I'm a, you know, they opened up the age category. They did.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, now that you're old.
Yeah, so I guess I can go compete and I don't have to coach anymore.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, they should, because Granite, I think, did, and the WADA and CrossFit did. I don't see why they wouldn't follow suit, right?
Right.
Dan, how did you get into doing CrossFit competitions?
So a gym opened up in my neighborhood, a CrossFit gym did. And I'd heard about CrossFit. This was maybe 5 years ago. I'd heard about CrossFit. I'd seen it on ESPN, and I said, man, those guys are kind of freaky. I don't know if it's for me, but it seems as interesting as hell. You know, it was like that thing you said, Ben, about the gladiator and the contestant. You love him, but you hate him, but you want to win, you don't. I felt the same thing when I first watched CrossFit. I was like, that's some freaky shit, man. I don't know if I'm into that. But then, like I said, but if it comes in my neighborhood, I'm going to try it out. That's for damn sure. So Horsepower CrossFit opened up in L.A. down the street, and I drove by it one day, and I walked in, and I just, hey, what is this about? And you know, it was about lifting at that time. I was probably like the 10th member there. I didn't understand the community behind it. I just knew it was a chance to lift, a chance to be competitive, and it was in a short window with short burst stuff. And by the time I started CrossFit, I'd been lifting for 35 years probably, 38 years. So I had a history under my belt, and I was tired of going to the gym and saying, okay, you know, should I do cardio first today? Is it going to be chest and biceps? Am I doing the 6-day, you know, split? You know, am I doing push-pull? I got tired after all of these years of doing the programming myself, and I was actually, you know, quite uninspired. Then when I walked into the gym, it felt like a breath of fresh air. And as I got in, and I don't know if you guys had this experience, because I know, Ben, that you've been in it for such a long time. But when I first was like in a big class workout after the ramp up period, and I saw these guys laying on the ground, you know, with tattoos, you know, I was like, oh my God, seriously? I'm never going to be laying on the ground. Come on, I'm a professional athlete. Uh-huh. You know, I used to wear spandex on TV. I'll never be that guy laying on the ground. Sure enough, about 3 weeks later, I'm that dude laying on the ground. And I think once I became that dude laying on the ground, you know, giving everything I had, and you guys know, when you give everything you have and into a workout, there's a kind of deep peace that you find within yourself where everything in the universe seems right just for a moment. And that's something I'd missed for a long time. Only something I found when I gave 100% all and I was in the flow of competing. And the instant I felt that in CrossFit, I was hooked and I fell in love, and I've been doing it ever since.
I think that's a great point you make about that that peace that you get when you've given 100% effort towards something. We talk about that a lot in my gym. I know Ben and I talk about it, about trying to bottle intensity, not necessarily shredding yourself for like 2 or 3 hours, you know, at the gym, but really distilling down that 100% effort into something that's effective and efficient. Because really, I mean, you want to get that feeling afterwards. That's a feeling of accomplishment. It's a feeling of, you know, satisfaction that you only get when you really put it all in. And if you're spending all that time doing push-pull, you know, back and buys, all those things that take forever and, you know, are kind of cumbersome, you rarely feel that. So I think it's cool to hear you talk about that as the moment that kind of changed your training style.
Well, you know what it is. It's plus I've been an athlete all my life, and I work really well with coaches. I'm a very coachable person because I know coaches who have more experience and who I believe in and who I trust have condensed knowledge, and they can help me reach a goal faster. So the coaches there were really, really good. And since then, I've sought out other coaches. I go work with Dusty Hyland and other guys, and wherever I can get good information from, you know, whether if it's from Ron Ortiz or Matt Kaplan, or even Jeff Dempsey. I talk to all these guys in my age group, and even younger guys. You know, Freddie Camacho. He's not that much younger. I think he's a year younger than I am. I talk to all these guys who are the same age group, and I appreciate people who've taken time to become an expert in an area, and I also like that aspect of it. But I also like the aspect, and I believe at all times in our life that we need to challenge ourselves mentally to acquire new skills and to accomplish new things. I think as human beings, we're wired to do that. And then when you're all of a sudden, you look at muscle ups and you're like, oh my God, I'm 235 pounds. How am I ever going to get up there? To me, it becomes a challenge. You know, so I like that thing of working day by day, figuring out a new skill and trying to master it. That being said, I'm still not very good at muscle ups.
So, you know, you talk about like all these upsides in terms of like the CrossFit community and some of the things that it offered you when you were looking for something, but you've also been around long enough to kind of see the dark side of fitness. And you talk about that in your previous book, and then I'm sure you touch on it in your new book, which we'll get to. But you talk a little bit in the past about steroids and drug use and that whole thing. Can you kind of maybe open up our eyes to your thoughts on that?
In respects to?
Just like, you know, like CrossFit being like this very positive aspect of fitness, and then, you know, steroids maybe being more of something that has a negative connotation. You know, could you, and as somebody who's kind of experienced both, can you?
I'm not quite sure what you're asking me here. So do I think there's steroid use in CrossFit? Do I think it's prevalent? Do I think it's beneficial? Do I think it hurts? What are you asking?
I think what Ben's asking, what I want to know is not necessarily if steroids are being used in CrossFit, because we know that they are. More the thing that drove you to use steroids initially, do you see that same sort of drive present in, you know, your new fitness regime with CrossFit?
Well, I think anytime there's a tremendous reward to succeed, people will do what it takes, even sometimes if it's against the rules, to achieve success. And I think, you know, it's not just a fitness problem. I think it's more of a cultural thing where we only value winners. We don't value second and third place. We don't put enough value on people having daily or everyday courage and doing the best we can do. So that puts pressure on us to succeed, to rise above the primordial soup, and to be recognized as special. So I think it's a deeper, complex issue than, you know, like I said, than CrossFit or football or whatever it is. It's what inside of us as human beings makes us want to be the best. Yeah. And what is each person willing to do to achieve that? Now, back when I first dabbled with hormones, it was back in probably before you guys were born, actually, probably 1981. Now, you got to remember, this was a time when if you did say the word steroids, people didn't know what it was. I remember I was playing football as a freshman in college. I got injured. I was at a JC. My dream was to go play at a four-year. So I blew my knee out. And in a second, I saw my dreams evaporate. They're gone. I was rehabbing, but I wasn't close to anywhere where I needed to be as the season was rolling along. And I saw this really, really huge dude working out at the gym. And, you know, it's like Schwarzenegger big. And I walked over to him. I said, dude, man, you look great. What are you doing? And he said, I take this thing. And I said, what? And he whispered in my ear. He said, I take steroids. It's like, what the hell is that? You know, I'm 17 years old at this time, 1980. And he says, it's something that helps you get bigger, stronger, faster. And I said, no, come on. That can't be true. And he said, I said, are they dangerous? And he's like, no, I get them from a doctor. They can't, you know, they're healthy. They can't be dangerous. And so I went, I said, dude, sign me up. I'm, you know, I'm going to get a football scholarship. So I went and saw the doc and up here in SoCal and turned me away. He said, you have to be 18. So I waited till my 18th birthday. My dad gave me $172. I went to his office again with my buddy. And that's when I was introduced to the world of steroids. It was under doctor supervision. It wasn't illegal at the time. Even when I played football in college, it wasn't illegal. It didn't become, I think, illegal in sports where they banned it until, I can't even remember, like the late 80s or 90s or something. Or, you know, it was just a whole different concept, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Wow, that's wild.
So you said the dude was big like Schwarzenegger? Like huge.
He was pretty good sized, you know, and when I asked him about it, he said, that's what he said to me. He said, you know, it's a secret thing that, you know, guys like Schwarzenegger, and he named a few pro football players, they're all taken to help them perform. That's what he said to me. I was like, okay, Schwarzenegger. Yeah, right. Yeah, he was one of my idols growing up.
And was the impact immediate? Did your knee just feel better, stronger, and you're kind of better than you were before, or did it take a little while, a little bit of work?
It took a lot of work. You know, I think that's the one fallacy of using hormones is people think, wow, you know, I'm going to take this. Number one, it can't make you a great athlete. Right. Athleticism is something that you're born with and also something that you train to acquire. It's hand-eye coordination. It's foot speed. It's the ability to perform, you know, different tasks. That will not help that. What it will do is if you can swing a bat, and you could hit 30 homers, 40 homers, increasing your strength in a motion that will increase your power at the point of impact, as we saw in baseball, will take you from 40 to 50 home runs to 70 to 75. But again, it's not going to take a guy who is not an athlete and make him an athlete.
Right. So you had a couple of really, really good insights there. And I'm kind of curious. You know, the book, which we're going to get into here in just a second, is one aspect. I feel like you're taking your experience and you're, you know, kind of giving it to this generation and this group of people that look up to you. But also, do you have the opportunity to mentor anybody around you? Because it sounds like you've got a lot of wisdom through experience, man.
You know, Ben, it's interesting. There's a time in life, and it's happened to me now, where helping someone achieve something, mentoring somebody and seeing them succeed feels as good, if not better, than your own success. And yes, there's a lot of people, you know, that I help on a personal basis. I believe, and a lot of this came to light after the heart attack I had in December of 2013. In an instant, it showed me, you know, facing my mortality, showed me, you know, what I loved in life, my reasons for living, and what made a life worth living. And I changed a lot of how I was living, and I share that in the Fuck Dying book, the new book. But something the Dalai Lama said that has stuck with me, and I use it as a daily thing to kind of guide the person I want to be and to make an impact. The Dalai Lama said, in each interaction we have with a human being, we have either the choice to lift that person up or not. Now, it seems like a simple statement, but if you look at it, it's really profound. So each human interaction we have, Ben and Blair, we have a choice. We can either pick that person up or not. And sometimes it's something as small as a pat on the back, a smile, or an encouraging word. But when we pick that person up, they in return affect the people in their immediate circle, and it lifts them up. So what we're doing by our simple act of being kind, being attentive, by lifting them up, by making that choice, we're creating a ripple effect of happiness and kindness in the world. So I try to show up every day of my life that way. You know, no matter how tired I am, no matter if I don't, what it is, I try to find and give to whoever needs it in any way I can every day. You know, like I said, sometimes it's just an encouraging word. I don't know if that answers your question directly.
No, that's awesome, man.
Yeah, and then, you know, on this, I don't know if this Kickstarter program will be up, still be up by the time this airs, but I'm doing like 15 one-on-one sessions that you can get on the Kickstarter. When you go for the book, you can go choose this. And I don't coach one-on-one anymore. I just don't have the bandwidth. I get asked all the time. I just can't do it. But I decided for the book that I would coach, you know, one or two sessions with somebody, not necessarily about CrossFit, but CrossFit, life, philosophy, productivity, gratitude, happiness, all the things that I've learned in my 53 years. So if someone wants to do that and this is still up, they can go to the FDying on Kickstarter.com and sign up to hang out with me for a bit and get anything that I know.
That's great. That's a great idea, man. I'm thinking a lot of people taking you up on that. Talk a little bit more about the book, about the F-Dying book. You know, you're still playing with the title, you said, but, I mean, the message is clear. Talk about the heart attack. Talk about the inspiration. Talk about what the product
is. It's called, right now, it's called Fuck Dying. And, you know, we put a EKG symbol where the U is, so it's EKG symbol, dying, CK dying. And the subtitle is How Cheating Death Kicked My Ass Into Loving, Learning, and Living My Best Life. So in December 2013, I was doing a light workout at the gym, at the box, and I started to get chest pain, shortness of breath. And I was like, what the hell? Nah. And I kept pushing myself to go back and work out and get back to the bar. But as I continued to push myself, that chest pain got worse. And all of a sudden, it felt like an elephant was stepping on my chest. It felt like I was trying to climb Mount Everest when I was doing a light cardio workout. I couldn't catch my breath. So I went back and sat on the couch at the back of the box and was just kind of going through the symptoms in my mind. I was like, okay, shortness of breath, chest pain. I reached up and touched my forehead, and it was dripping wet. So I was in a cold sweat, and I was still trying to navigate and figure this out because, you know, people like us, that doesn't happen to us. You know, we're the fittest people in society. We're that upper one percentile. We don't get heart attacks. But then as I was sitting on the couch at the back of the box, I looked down, and I noticed subconsciously I was shaking my left arm. So I had numbness going down my left arm, and I was like, oh, my God, that could be. And I said, nah. So I talked to a buddy of mine, Ben Ceccarelli, who works at the gym. I told him what I was going through, and he's like, oh, Dan, you're healthy. You know, maybe it's you pulled a muscle. I'm like, no, Ben, I know my body well enough. This isn't right. Now I'm kind of crumpled over on the couch, kind of afraid to move. I felt like I had a cramp in my chest. You guys know how you get like a cramp in your calf?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Or your hamstring? And then you're like, once you get it worked out, you're afraid to kind of flex because you're afraid it's going to squeeze on you again.
Yep.
That's how I was for like 20 minutes sitting on the couch. I was kind of afraid to move because I felt like at any second, like whatever was hurting in my chest was just going to clamp down and I was going to die. But being the bullheaded guy that I am, I still didn't go to the hospital. I had my friend take me to urgent care. So, you know, so anybody ever has chest pain, anybody's ever working out, and I've talked to so many masters in the CrossFit Masters group, you know, who've survived heart attacks because of their level of fitness. You know, you having chest pain, the first thing you want to do is you want to go to the hospital. Every second counts. My bullheadedness could have killed me. I don't know if I'm supposed to be here. I think the reason I am here is to share this message, and which I've made it my mission to do. And that message is about, you know, how to master the art of living a happy, more fulfilled life. So after the chest pain, I went to the urgent care, and they put the EKGs on, and they said, you know, Mr. Clark, you're having a heart attack. Still, was hard to comprehend. And I was like, okay, we need to get you an ambulance. I said, no. My friend Ben, he's going to drive me to the hospital. I'm not getting an ambulance. I've never been in an ambulance. And then we got in an argument, me and the doctor and I, a little bit. And finally I said, why are you insisting? And he said to me, because if you die on the way to the hospital, it shouldn't be up to your friend to resuscitate you.
Oh, wow.
Right when he said that, the shit got real. And I remember I laid back and I just let go. You know, and it was, I just surrendered. You know, for the first time in a long time. You know, you guys know how we try to control everything in our lives, what we eat, what we do, how we train, what we say, what we don't say. We control everything all the time. That's tremendously taxing on us. I don't think we all realize how much willpower that takes. But when I truly surrendered, I surrendered to the sound of the sirens, to them taking me to the ambulance, to the situation I was in. And even though I was having a heart attack, and even though I was close to dying, because I surrendered completely, I felt more peaceful than I'd felt in a long time. There was really a deep sense of personal peace. And it taught me something in that moment. I know as, you know, athletes growing up, you know, surrender means losing. I realized it's a paradox. Sometimes we have to surrender now to win. Sometimes we have to take a step back to get a running start. So it's interesting, guys, what these moments of inflection teach us in our lives.
Yeah, I mean, that's incredible.
So I want you to continue the story. So I'm surprised, first of all, that this heart attack took a half an hour. Is that typical? The heart attacks stretch out that long?
Well, it depends. So people can have heart attacks, very, very minor ones, and, you know, not even go to the doctor. People can have a heart attack, go to cardiac arrest, and die on the spot. It really, really depends where the heart attack – which part of your heart is affected. We'll get into the science if I won't make it too long and boring, but most people think heart attacks all happen exclusively when your arteries are clogged from plaque and blood can't get through. So you get 100% clog of an artery, blood can't get through, your heart stops getting blood, and it starts to die. That's only half of the heart attacks. The other 50% of the heart attacks come from what we call plaque ruptures. This is not something people talk about, and I had no idea about it until after I had the heart attack, and I was thinking, how could this possibly happen to me? I need to research this. I need to understand this. So what a plaque rupture is, and it can happen with only like 10% of plaque. You don't have to be clogged at all. So normally plaque calcifies and it gets hard and it lies under the endothelium, which is the outer layer of skin inside of our arteries. So the plaque is hardened in there, calcified. But for some reason, in some people, that plaque gets soft. It gets like a pimple underneath the skin. And when that pimple pops, it sends plaque downstream. Now, if it's big pieces of plaque, that can clog our artery. If it goes to the brain, it's a stroke or an embolism. But what causes the heart attack for most people with plaque ruptures is your body's own clotting factors. Your body sends its army out, its clotting factors, to go to the place where that pimple popped in your artery, where that plaque rupture was. And all those clotting factors go to seal that rupture, and they end up clogging your artery so the blood can't get through, and it gives you a heart attack. So that's what I had. I had a plaque rupture. So they went in and they put a stent in to hold the artery open where the wall had ruptured. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you had emergency surgery upon arriving at the hospital. Is that correct?
Yeah, I sure did. You know, they rush you in there and they put you into the hospital and, you know, they start running all these tests. So most urgent cares, when you have a heart attack, there's enzymes that are in your blood that aren't supposed to be there. They're cardiac enzymes called troponin. And most urgent cares can't test. So they have to make a calculated guess based upon your EKG if you're having a heart attack versus if you're just having a spasm. So that's why it's difficult for them. But when you go to the hospital, they do the blood testing, the ultrasound. And, you know, I just remember him saying, look, how long have you been having this? I said, well, you know, started at this time. He's like, oh, my God, we have to, you know, rush you into the emergency room. You need to have surgery. But there's humor everywhere. I remember, you know, I asked him, you know, I was kind of out of it. And I said, well, what do you do? What do you mean surgery? Are you going to split my chest open? He's like, no, we're going through your groin. And I'm like, okay. And for some reason, I don't know what I was thinking. I thought he meant my penis. I'm going to stick a tube, you know, through the tip of my urethra, and somehow they're going to get to my heart. Now, if you ask maybe some of the girls I dated when I was younger, maybe that was their way to get to my heart. But I remember there was, like, the nurse, and, like, she's grabbing my junk, and, like, she's shaving my groin. And I'm like, what are you doing? You know, aren't you going to go in my penis? She's like, no, your groin, your femoral artery. So, I mean, I think you can, you know, find humor in any, but I will tell you one interesting experience, and this is a little bit outside of CrossFit, but it's more with, you know, being in that moment, and I think it speaks more to where we're at as a country right now, is I remember being wheeled out of the ambulance, into through the emergency room, and I had this really, really strange out of body experience. I wasn't dead by any means. My heart was still beating, but I could see myself floating above my body, and it was the weirdest thing because I'm not a religious person. But I remember as I was floating above my body and watching myself be pulled in, you know, or pushed into the emergency room, you know, through the doors, I could see everybody below me. But the way I saw each person is that they were like this white light. And it was interesting because for me, it was a spiritual experience because I noticed that everybody had the same light, regardless of their color, regardless of their race, regardless of their age, regardless of their sexual orientation, we all had the same light, and this one light connected us all. In that moment for me, I realized what God was. God to me was love. And yeah, it was a life-changing experience.
So through this perspective, through the heart attack and through the recovery, that's what spawned this book. Is that correct?
That's correct. You know, for me, the idea was not to only come back, Ben, but it was to come back as a better man, better human being, to be happier. I think so many of us are lost in the grind. You know, we are checking things off our to-do list, but we rarely feel like we spend enough time on what's important. You know, we're so busy competing and keeping up and trying to achieve this idea of success that we forget to live. And I was one of those people who was rarely satisfied with anything I achieved in my life. You know, as soon as I achieved something, I was off chasing the next thing. I didn't allow myself to feel good. I allowed stress, you know, the cortisol in my body, because I thought I had to keep pushing all the time. You know, I didn't stop and have enough gratitude for the things I had. And a lot of this awakening happened, you know, with the heart attack. And it's also, you know, I think, hey, look, everybody in life, you know, you guys, you know, everybody in life is going to come across some kind of obstacle, some kind of setback. It could be cancer. It could be bankruptcy. It could be a business deal gone bad. It could be a sick child. We're all going to come across these things. I don't think there's enough literature out there that shows us how to overcome these things, that teaches us to make the choice to stand up and rise again. And for me, it became abundantly clear how to do that. And it became abundantly clear of the things I needed to change in my life. And I share those in the book. I also remember, you know, look, the first day home from the hospital, guys, you know, the doctors say, don't lift, don't walk downstairs, don't, you know, move the trash cans, don't do anything because it could trigger another heart attack. You're most susceptible the first month. So I remember the first day home from the hospital, my goal for the entire day was to walk down to the stairs and touch the refrigerator and not die. And when I got there and I touched that refrigerator, man, I felt like I won the CrossFit Games. Perspective is an interesting thing. But it's also like, you know, if you're doing CrossFit and you want to get better, I think think, you know, once you hit that curve where you become a good athlete, the steps it takes to become great are those little improvements every day. They're not as easy to see. We all remember the elation when we got our first muscle up. I mean, like, yeah. But do we remember when we got our third one? You know, we got our second consecutive one? No, it goes away. But you have to push yourself in any endeavor to get just a little bit better each day. And that's how I came back. You know, the second day, my goal for the entire day was to walk down and touch my mailbox and not die. The third day was to touch my neighbor's door. The fourth day was to go to the corner. Each day, I pushed myself a little further. About three and a half weeks into it, I remember riding the bike. I got the okay to ride the stationary bike. And I was riding it without any resistance in my garage. But to me, I felt like I was on the Tour de France. Each day, I kept pushing myself to get a little bit better, to have hope, to have daily courage. And 15 months later, I was at a local competition, standing on the podium after placing. So that was the genesis of growth and of daily courage and of getting better.
Dude, I love it, man. I love it. I love all that stuff. The daily goals. I mean, I think it's great. Is the format, do you write the book in that sort of a format, like where it's, you know, chapter one is, you know, working on pushing yourself a little bit more each day. Chapter two is gratitude. Or how do you organize this?
So just a little backstory. I started writing when I was 24 years old, after I'd finished playing football, when I was starting Gladiators. I was doing all this physical stuff, you know, with my body. But there was a warrior poet inside me who needed to express himself in ways that I didn't know how to yet as a man. So I put it on paper. I taught myself to type using a typing program. I read all these books on screenwriting, and I started to tell these stories in the screenwriting format. So I have an idea how to write, and I also have a great fear that I'm not a good writer. So I write in a format that I can get away with a lot of my shortcomings as a writer, and I do things like I write first person present. I did that for my whole book. So in other words, it's like you're there with me in the room, like you're a fly on the wall. So I started out Fuck Dying the same way, where you're there with me when I'm at the gym. You're there, like you feel like you're in the car with me when I'm, you know, like I got chest pain, I'm doing this. You're there with me the whole way. And then, so it's kind of a very visceral, real experience, like you're reading a thriller. Then it segues into more of telling 30 stories that are stories within themselves that encapsulate something I've learned. Like the one we were talking about earlier was when mentorship starts to feel as good as accomplishing things yourself. I realized that, and this is one of the things in one of the chapters in the book. There are all these standalone stories with insights. They're not like, go do this, go do that. You read a story and you can see yourself and you see your life and who you want to be within that story. So the one about lifting people up was during the Open 2 years ago. And it was helping a girl. It was 3 years ago, get her first muscle up during the Open. And I remember how amazing that felt. It felt better than my first muscle up. And that was the little spark that told me, like, oh, wow, you know what? Helping others, lifting others can be as satisfying. And then I go into a little bit of research, you know, and talk about the Dalai Lama. So that's how the chapters are structured. They're all individual short stories, you know, 3 to 8 pages long that you can read. And I used all the big words I know. So there's only a few 4-syllable words in the whole book.
That's great.
Very helpful for Ben.
Yeah, it's good for me. You know,
Ben, it's only stick figure pictures.
Yeah. I'm looking for like a comic book version. No, I'm just kidding. I'm actually really looking forward to this because, you know, I feel like the most dynamic iteration of Dan Nitro Clark may at first appear to be the American Gladiator version, but it sounds like now, like, you're kind of, I mean, even more so, like, coming into your own, man. Like, it sounds so cool to hear you talking about all this perspective and now being able to just share this with so many different people. Is that how you feel, or do you feel like this is a guy writing a book who's past his prime and I'm just trying to share a little bit?
No, I do do look athletically. I am past my prime. So that's no question. Right. You know, like when I hear people talk about PRs, you know, I PR'd today, and I'm like, I PR'd at 27. That was, you know, 27 years ago. You know, but I think what we have to learn to do is to be kind to ourselves. You know, especially the master athletes and even regular athletes, we're too damn hard on ourselves. You know, give yourself a break, take a breath, and be happy for what you can do. You know, like example, I used to bench, God, what was it, 465. I'd put 500 on the rack, you know, do 8 reps in the squat. I wasn't doing full squats. I'd go to the bench. That's what we did in football, you know, squat down to the bench. I'll never be that strong again. And you know what? Some days I'm not okay with it, and I hate it. And other days I think, you know what, I'm where I'm at, and this is my 50-plus PR. I think a lot of our suffering comes from, you know, this is a Buddhist sentiment. A lot of our suffering comes from attachment to how we want things to be instead of how things are. And it's a natural decline of the human body that happens to all people. Nobody is saved. Nobody can escape Father Time. But I think what makes the difference in individuals is how we handle that with grace. And then we take our knowledge, like you said, Ben, and we start to share it with other people. So I think this book, for me, you know, I've changed my life focus a little bit. You know, I have another business where I put on obstacle adventure races. Now out of this book and out of this new mission, I've been speaking a lot. You know, people are coming up to me like crazy with offers to go speak in different places. So it's been interesting when you follow your passions, when you take a risk, you do what you believe in, you follow the dreams deep in your heart, and you try to offer value and be in service, good things will happen.
Dan, I got to tell you, man, I've been really, really impressed with this conversation, your outlook, your experiences. I think you should take those people up on their offers to have you come speak, because a person with your physical background paired with your ability to kind of communicate on a very authentic level, I think it's powerful.
I appreciate that. I appreciate the platform that you guys have given me today to, you know, go out and speak about things, you know, CrossFit, Gladiators, my book, and things I'm passionate about. I'm really, really grateful for, you know, that platform.
Yeah, man, absolutely. We appreciate you sharing with us. If people want to get your book, when is it going to be available, and how do they go about doing that?
When does this go up, Ben?
So we're recording this on Wednesday, August 16th. This will go up on Thursday, August 17th.
Oh, perfect. So what people can do is, if you want to go contribute to the Kickstarter campaign, and I started to do Kickstarter. I did Kickstarter for a couple of reasons. One is when you write a book and you go through a traditional publisher, like I did with my first publisher, what a lot of people don't know is when you hit done, it still takes a year, almost like releasing a movie, before people can get the book in their hands. I wanted to take more control of that, so I decided to go to Kickstarter. And the reason I went Kickstarter, even though the book is already done, is I wanted to give a chance to let people connect on a deeper level than they could if the book was just on Amazon. So when you go on Kickstarter, you can get a signed copy. You can elect to work with me if there's spots left one-on-one. You can do a lot of different things, and I thought that was a better way to release a book. So go to Kickstarter, fdying.com. Fdying on Kickstarter. You can find it. And look, even if you've only got $9 to pledge towards it, it's not the money that counts. It counts that you stood up and supported something that you believe in. And that's more than just a book. It's a movement about mastering the art of living a happier, better, and more fulfilled life. So does that make sense? So it's not so much the money all the time. It's the voices and the people behind it. Gives people a chance to stand up and say, yeah, you know what? That was really, really cool. I support this.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. I think it's a really great way to go about launching a project and to get other people involved and have people behind it. So
I think the word's community, right?
It's community. I think you're right. I think there's something very powerful in a community and a group of people who kind of have that common vision, you know, and unite behind somebody who's willing to talk about it.
Right. Now, are you recovered from the games? I know you went out there and you of stuff for Castro. Are you alive?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good, man. I'm feeling all right right now. I just got back into a full swing of training, which, you know, I've got, you know, a few things going on. You know, right now I'm parenting four kids. I've got a couple of affiliates, you know, that I run. And then so, but, you know, ultimately down deep, I still want to compete. So I spend a couple hours in the gym going pretty hard every day. So I'm just back into that full swing this week.
You know, Ben, those are all great things, man. Yeah. I mean, the joy you get from raising a kid. Mm. Oh, my God. I mean, there's so much happiness in those moments, you know, when you see them smile, when they hug you. It's amazing. There's nothing like it. And all the things you're doing is, you know, I just want to make sure that you're seeing the gift in all those every single day and you're appreciating what you have. Because the one thing I've learned through this whole experience, that is, time is not guaranteed.
Hmm. I think about that. I think about that more often these days. Just you know, trying to be appreciative, like you said, and you know, the perspective of somebody like yourself coming on the podcast. This podcast for Blair and I both is a labor of love, and we like having quality guests on that kind of contribute to our life as well. So, it's been really cool having you on, Dan.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Dan.
And Blair, I look forward to getting to know you a little better. I feel like Ben and I have like this little bro sesh on the side. And as when I come to NorCal, I have a Gladiator Rock and Run in NorCal on October 28th. I'll make sure to swing by and hang with you guys both. And again, thank you guys so much for, you know, giving me the platform to come on and letting me be on the wall and the echelon of all the greats who've been on your show.
Oh, absolutely, man. Our pleasure.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Yeah, man. And if you guys want to follow us after this, go to btbpodcast.com, sign up for our newsletter, go on Instagram at btbpodcast, and we look forward to hearing from you soon.